So hello, good afternoon, good evening, good morning to all, and welcome to this edition of Soccer Hub Talks. My name is Ricardo Albeira. I'm the CEO of and founder of Soccer Hub. Soccer Hub, as you know, is an online education platform for soccer coaches, soccer analysts, soccer performance analysts, soccer scouts. So you can find in our platform many online content about all of these subjects. So before we start, I would like to ask you, please, if you can hear me and see me well, please click on the like button just to make sure that everything is okay. Also, I would like to ask you to introduce on the chat box the country that you are based in and also your job, if you are a soccer analyst, a soccer coach, so we can have a good idea about what kind of job and work do you do, so we can adapt a bit our conversation. As you know, this is a live interview, so we will be able to ask questions. Just introduce your questions in the chat box and I will select some to ask to our interviewer of today. Okay, so also during this webinar and during the next 24 hours, we'll be offering a 25% discount in all of our online courses. You just have to use the coupon code TALKS25 to get it. I will introduce all of this information in the chat box so you can benefit from this support, considering that you are at home now and you can take some of your time to do online courses and to evolve with your education. Once again, please introduce on the chat box the country that are you based in and also some information about yourself, your job, and what kind of occupation do you have, okay? So today we are here with Portuguese soccer coach, football coach, Pedro Caixinha. Pedro Caixinha, it's an experienced coach who worked at the highest level in clubs such as Sporting CP in Portugal, Al Hilal in Saudi Arabia, Panathinaikos in Greece, in the Saudi Arabia national team, in Liria and national both in Portugal, Santos Laguna in Mexico, Al Garafa in Qatar, Glasgow Rangers in Scotland, and also Cruz Azul in Mexico. So we will introduce now Pedro Caixinha in this conversation. Just a second and we will get right back. So hello, Pedro. Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Is everything okay?
Hello, Ricardo. Yes, I can hear you. Good afternoon to everyone. Afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here. Let's have a good football talk.
Okay, thank you very much. We already have people from Portugal, from Romania, from Spain, from Italy, Argentina, Austria, Almeria, Fenerbahce, India also. So welcome to all. We will start our conversation with head coach Pedro Caixinha. For me and Soccer Hub, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. And Pedro, as you know, our platform is very much focused in delivering content to coaches. Of course, our purpose is always to explain how did the top coaches got into this highest level. So my first question to you, Pedro, is for you to talk a bit more about your career, but mostly what were the steps that you took to get into football coach. I'm aware that you played also, not at the highest level, unfortunately, but I would like to know a bit more about how were you able to get and try and start working as a football coach, Pedro. Can you help us out with that?
Yeah. So as all the coaches that are coming from the academical level, I think that we all need to start from the youth system. That's what I did. So I start with the under 40. After I complete my my academic degree, I start with the under 40. After that, I went up to the under 70 and under 90s, all in my hometown club, Clube Desportivo de Beja. And after that, I try to always follow the education side of the football because I had a degree. I had also the opportunity and chance to make the coaches abroad, which I did in Scotland and at the same time in Portugal. So I always had in my mind that the education for me was very important in order to receive knowledge and after to receive that knowledge, to have my to have the possibility to create my own knowledge. So that's what I did in all those steps. So education was one very, very important point for me. Decency, the persistence that you have in order to follow one goal or follow one desire or follow a dream, like in my situation. I also think that the times were different than are nowadays. I'm going to try to explain better, because in those days the academical coaches were appearing on the process. Like, for example, everyone having the reference of Mourinho and so many others that came after him. But now the things are changing. I do believe that now the former players are getting in action and again, and we are going to have the chance, the academic on the academical side of the football, to get along, to be included on the technical staffs. But it's much more difficult to get on the top, being the head coach in all these situations. And the other point is about the gratitude, and the gratitude that you need also to give an interesting point of value to those who help you along in all this process. So those were the points that that lead me and help me to get the dream I have to be a football coach in a higher level, and of course to keep it in the level you achieved.
So Pedro, you are saying that it's very important for us to have a kind of academic background to understand better football and all of these processes. But do you also believe, and you are saying that now those who are entering into the industry are mainly former football players, but do you believe that, I know that you are also a football player, do you believe that it's important to have some experience as a football player when you try to become a top football coach? Do you believe that this experience is important for you to understand better the process, Pedro?
I do believe that that it's important to have a clear idea about what you want to do. And of course, it's not a question of only being the experience you receive as a former player or the knowledge you receive as academical level. I do believe that you need to mix both of them. And of course, I believe that the future coach needs to have a perfect knowledge, much more than tactics and techniques. But if you can mix it, it will be better. I believe that also you need to have a lot of skills nowadays, not only to know the football and to have a clear idea about the football, because I do think also that what you call identity about the process or the way the team you want your team to play and to be identified like that is becoming, as time is passing, which I can call a creative identity, which means that you need to be creating all the time, even inside in one simple game, in order for you to have a different variables or different possibilities in order to your team to perform. So of course it's important to have the experience that you have on the pitch, you have on the locker room, but the education is also very, very important in order for you to create the cycle I told you. Receive the knowledge and create your own knowledge, always on a cycle base.
Okay, Pedro, thank you. Well, you said that all of this is important, that help you out to get into this specific industry as a coach. I imagine that you didn't start working as a top level coach. You started in smaller clubs. But what do you believe that were the most important and decisive steps that you took for you to go from smaller clubs to bigger clubs? Of course, the investment in your education and to get more knowledge were important. But what would you say that were the most important steps in your career for you to be able to reach the highest level, Pedro?
I do believe that networking. Okay. I mean, to know the right persons, and in order to take the right persons to be convinced that they can bet on you. I mean, that you are a value that they can bet. Of course, the education level and the knowledge that you have are very important. but know the right people at the right time, it is going to help you a lot. It's not a question of being, I'm from, my hometown is in the inner country, so it's not passing nothing here. So if I'm not going to the centers of decision, I was not having this this sort of chances. So I must tell you that, for example, the master degree was the major point that created on me those type of networking and those type of connections that allow me to go in front and have different sorts of possibilities. That's mm-hmm. that's one point that lead me, for example, to work in Sporting of Lisbon. So knowing Pedro Milomes, which was one of the professor and the Sporting Academy director by those times, lead me directly to Fernando Santos mm-hmm. to start working with Sporting of Lisbon as a scout to analyze the opponents, for example, and the step after to work in the coaching staff with Giuseppe Zero. So mm-hmm. this was very important in that moment in time. And of course, it was only the first step to take you to the point that you are nowadays.
Okay, Pedro, thank you very much. What about when you got into those bigger clubs such as Glasgow Rangers and your path also in Mexico? What are the biggest challenges that you faced in those clubs? For instance, I had an interview with Alan Pardew some months ago. And he said that one of the biggest challenge that he had is to deal with the star players, you know, to find strategies to motivate those players, the top level players, that many of them, they earn more than the coach. So they feel like very important. But okay, this is one of the challenges. What are the other challenges that you faced when you were in these top level clubs, Pedro?
I always look to raise the standards. I mean, when you get to one club, those top clubs, and of course to get there, you need to have a pass that supports the reason why you are getting there. And besides that, I think you need to have a match between the philosophy. I do believe that nowadays, at least it's my opinion, coaches need to be selected by their own ideas. You are not buying a name, you are not hiring a name, but you are buying ideas, and you need to share those ideas with the club that you are getting to get involved and to be contract for. So I do believe that the first point is about to raise the standards that those clubs that you may call, for example, in my opinion, a big club, if you have history, if you have trophies, and of course, if you have fans, those are the big clubs in order for me to call a big club. Uh-huh. And those clubs along the history, in order to win trophies and in order to get fans worldwide, needs to improve and to be creative and to be some sort of innovation situations all the time in order to look for the future, to have a vision in front of them. So that's what we are looking for. That's what I'm telling you about, to raise the standard. The other point, it's because you live in such a competitive world, is about to create even more identity on those clubs and to have more identity on those clubs. So you need to have a united, to work as a unite, because all of these clubs, to be huge like they are, they have all of them huge structures, but those clubs, the biggest clubs I work with the biggest structures, people that work for the clubs were having all the same feeling of belonging, the same feeling of have the right approach to the club in order for you to grow on a daily basis, and all the structures were connected. Mm-hmm. So that's the main point I fell on those big clubs, and of course for you to have a vision and an interaction between all the structures, mm-hmm. in order not to be only the football one, rather than be connected also with the communication one, or for at the same times, because when we define some sort of goals or season objectives, so you also need to define it at those levels in order for everybody to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Pedro, before we advance to my next question, I have here a question from Oscar Alva. And it's very interesting because it's something that we are discussing in Portugal right now, you know, with all of these younger coaches going to the biggest clubs in Portugal. And it's a bit of a debate here in Portugal. But my question is from Oscar. Pedro, how important and valid do you think coaching badges are as far as measuring a talent of a coaches goes?
I think, as I told you, the education for me is very important. You can do the education by being present on the coaches' badges, on the coaches' educations, but also that's what I'm doing now, for example, when I'm not working. So I try to analyze all the concepts I have so far. I try to increase those concepts or make them better, at least the way I think nowadays, the football, the training methodology and everything. And you need to study to do that. So it's a question for you to improve. But by the other hand, we live in a world that is made by rules and we need to follow the rules. Because for me to be a sports scientist, I need to study 5 years. To be a master degree, I need to study two more and after present a thesis. So this is the way, this is a process. And this is a process we need to respect. So it's a process that takes time. And of course, for us to be involved, so we need to follow it. So if you want to be outside of the rules, you cannot be part of this world.
Pedro, one more question here. I'm not following my script. I'm selecting some questions from our audience because I believe you can enrich more with that. A bit of a technical question. What is Pedro's opinion about tactical periodization model? And what is for him the difference between the model in the preseason and during the season? It's a question from Alex Chitsov.
Hello, Alex. Of course, as Portuguese, we all follow the tactical periodization. But just a couple of minutes before, I was telling you that I was analyzing all the process and especially the way I was seeing the training, the match preparation, and of course, all the process, the way we see the game and how do we consider an idea of the game. So, of course, the basis need to be the tactical periodization. But for example, for me, it's difficult to define the sub-principles, so as the sub-principles and so on. So I try to organize the things differently. And I call it, of course, the moments of the game are the same, the four dynamical and the two statical ones, always having a related connection. But for example, for me, I define behavioral goals, which are the most important ones, which need to be, for example, the way the team then need to have a collective intention in each one of those moments. So that's the main point. After that, you have some sort of phases, spaces, in order for you to have one organization in each one of those moments. For example, for the moments of organization, we define four stages or four phases, if you want it. Uh-huh. And for the moments of transition, we define three. So all of them, they are connected as a cycle. And of course, you try to connect it as well also with the set pieces, which are connected directly with the offensive or defensive end, and vice versa. We start the preseason looking for the model. And the model, for me, needs to be always dynamic. As I told you before, when we were discussing with Ricardo or answer to Ricardo to one specific questions, I do believe that this identity needs to be as much as creative as possible. You cannot be linked to one model because, as I told you, now that I'm not working at the moment, I'm trying to get the things more than I was thinking before. So even then, you are on a long week, which is 7 days, and you have time to prepare that game, I think you also need to think a little bit more further. So, for example, because in our Lex experience, for example, in Mexico, we have a lot of a density competition. So we were playing each 3 or 4 days. We were having long weeks and short weeks. And we prepared the preseason just like that. So, for example, for you to have an idea, the first the first week, it's a long week, which we start with a day minus five, and we finish with a competition. And the only difference is that we only take care about our model. I mean, we just work our ideas regarding to the to this description I told you before, and we end up with a 11 side game, which can be within the squad, or for example, bringing the under 20 or under 23 team to play against us. When you get along on the competition, you just add one point, which is the opponent, which give you much more specificities to the competition, because you are not going to play alone. You are going to play with different sort of conditions, different sort of opponents. A 4-4-2, for example, can be totally different in 10 teams, for example. So it's not a question of the system. So you just need to have the comfort. As I told you, I like to have this match. And each one of the, not only in each one of the moments, but also in each one of the spaces, phases, we need to have this sort of confront in order for you to have the dynamical of the model you want, because in each week or even in midweek, you have different opponents. So I think that's where you get the creativity of the model or the idea you want to implement.
Okay, another question now from Bugra Aksu. Do players should adapt to tactic, or tactic should be organized looking players?
I do believe that the major point now is not about tactics. Football is not about tactics anymore. Mm-hmm. I do believe that the most important thing is the players to be convinced, the players that have a lot of confidence in what they are training, they are a lot of confidence and convinced in which the things that they are training are going to be happening on the games. So the understanding of the game for me, the decision makers is what's really important nowadays. So what you are trying to do, it's educate the players to see the game at least similar the way you see it, because they are going to be the main actors. And I think that you need to be much more open and ecological the way you make the approach on the training sessions, because you need to give them the idea or the pass or the orientation you want them to perform on the match. The basic principles, but they are going to make the difference. And for them to make the difference, they need to be convinced about that. So it's not a question about the tactical, it's a question of being convinced, having the right confidence. And to have the right confidence, you need to defend them all the time. And that's what, for me, can make the whole difference.
Another question from Francesco Mascaro. It's about match analysis. Which match analysis data are more important for you in order to value a team performance? What kind of information do you look for more oftenly when you are thinking about how to operate against your opponent?
The patterns. I just look more about the patterns. For example, if it's something that happens once or twice, just twice, I just don't care about it. I just like look for the patterns, and the pattern can be, of course, different levels. For example, if you analyze one team for 10 games, for sure you are going to identify the way the team behaves and the idea that they have, the collective intention they have in each one of the moments of the game. So if you are going to analyze them by lines, you are going to have the same. But those patterns for me are going further and deeply. When you analyze the one of the advantage that we are looking for, we look for four advantage in the game, but one advantage, I think it's created by the relation of the players. And that type of relation, I call it socio-affective relation. Okay. And that relation can make also different on the game. And it's not you as a coach that create those sort of relations. You can create, but not the way they are created, especially between players. And that's a relation that also can have a sort of patterns and, of course, a sort of relations which can inhibit or can empower the relation or the good relation within a team that can make the difference.
Okay, perfect, Pedro. Thank you. Another question from Akbar. As a coach who has experience to work with young players and with adult teams, what do you think is a common problem for young players to go to the professional football?
I always look to have, in all the clubs I have been passing through, to have a relation to go further, at least the under 17. In Mexico, it was easier because under 17 and under 20, they were playing at, they were following the same calendar. So they were having the same weekly planification as we were having. They were training at the same time as we. So I could call a lot of players in those ages to be working with us, and it was very, very important for them to have that, to receive that, those habits and to receive the same contents and the same patterns and the same behavior that the professional ones were receiving. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a question that you need to have it along the club from base to top and top to base in order for you to create that path to be easier in all the levels. So I do believe that football, it's not only, as I told you, about tactical or technical situations, but you need to have a global view about the whole process. So we were talking about physical situations, psychological situations, cognitive situations, nutritional situations, communication skills. We are talking about a lot of things. And of course, if you are not imposing, but dealing with those sort of things with the first team, I do believe that also on the youth system, you need to educate them, you know, along the path in order for when they get there, they are ready to do it, or at least to deal with it in a different way.
We have here a very interesting question from Luis Suarez. Do you have any tactical influence from other sports?
Yes, totally. I do believe that one sport that might have the biggest transfer to football is basketball.
Okay.
Basketball, especially on the transitions, on the transitions moment, on the turnovers, which they call the turnovers, on the moments that the team needs to be unbalanced. And for me, one balanced team, it's the one that almost is not exposed when you are lose the ball, and it can expose the others when you recover the ball. So I do believe, and since my times in the university, I had a professor, which is now a professional coach in Portugal in basketball, which teaches a lot about that. And we were talking about three type of sport that might have a sort of transfer. They were basketball, handball, and also football. But I do believe that basketball and football are more related.
Okay, perfect. Another question now from Rudy Doughty. He's talking from the US. How many people does your technical staff consist of? And can you explain briefly how you organize the work with them and the different responsibilities that your assistant coaches have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very interesting question. When I was young,
you're not young anymore, is that it?
I will be young enough for my entire. It's all here. Here is our right age. Young, I mean, it's 6 years old, mm-hmm. 6, 8 years old. I used to go to the locker room when my father used to play in Portuguese second division. And be on the sidelines, taking the balls to give them to be playing again, and get on the locker room to take the tea. And those days, I do remember that was only the coach was doing everything.
Yeah.
Nowadays, the technical staffs are getting much more specific, and I do believe that we need to extend them even more. So for you to have an idea, we have, it's myself, okay. Elder, which is one of the assistants. I call all of them assistants. independently if they have different tasks, of course, or different specificities on the task they perform. I call them all assistants. So I have Elder. Elder, for example, it's the responsible for me to organize the set pieces. So he's the one that organizes the set pieces, present the set pieces to the players, works the set pieces with the players along the week, and also during the game is having that responsibility. So of course I'm organizing, coordinating everything, but he's the one responsible to do this. We have Pedro, which it's the main analyst. Mm-hmm. Pedro Malta is the main analyst, so he's the one who scouts the opponents, presents the opponents to the team, and also it's in communication with us from the stands and also in the off time that coming with us to perform and show us the images in order for us to present and choose the ones we need to present to the players. Oscar Tojo, which is our training methodologist, and make all the type of monitorization, the way we want to do everything on a daily basis, everything regarding to the players that you can imagine on the pitch, outside the pitch, once they are home, is the one who's doing everything. We have Bellman, which is the goalkeeper's coach, and we have Polivius also, which works specifically on the preventive work. Not a physiotherapist, but more on the preventive work side of. For you to have an idea, also they all have license degrees. Uh-huh. They all have license degree. So what we are doing also, for example, in this moment that you are passing now, and the players need to perform and try to not lose the form, at least physically, at home. We try to have that concern on a daily basis, especially on the preventive work and the main needs of each one of the players have. So as you know, the preventive work is not only a question of the sporting cells that may create some sort of imbalances, and those imbalances may create some sort of injuries. But each one of us is having is on imbalances and needs. So we are having like 4 to 5 PTs, which are having like 4 to 5 players to work on a daily basis to try to balance those imbalances, let's say it like that, that each one of the players are having. Mm-hmm. So the relation we have starts really early in the morning. So for example, for us, if we start the training session at 10 o'clock, normally I will be the first one arriving to the training ground. I will be arriving around 6 or 6:30 in the morning. Okay. And most of them will be arriving at 7 o'clock. We'll have the breakfast together, and after, beside this group of the technical staff, we are also having the doctor in order to have the training session meeting. When we get to before 1 hour and a half before that training session, we have the wellness test, which Oscar is passing to us, so we know how to organize the groups from the training session that I prepare normally on the previous day. I prepare it to the whole week, which is a long week or a short week, it doesn't matter. But I can change in this moment in time, and it's in this moment in time that I'm concluding, for example, the training groups in order to perform in that training session. So 1 hour and a half before we hold a meeting, we discuss all the points and we discuss all the dynamics and the organization of the training session. And it's in this moment that I pass to them all the responsibilities. We are going to lead this exercise, that exercise, how we are going to rotate, how we are going to do everything. And by the end of the training session, after everyone conclude their tasks, we will be having another meeting in order to understand what went good or went on the way we were expecting according to the plan, or another sort of things that we need to change or discuss it later. After that, we have lunch together. After the lunch, each one is going to their own offices, and depending on the desks, some might extend the work until 4 o'clock in the evening, others 5, others 7, others 8, others 10, and so on.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it was a wonderful explanation, very detailed, and I believe that for our audience to understand these concepts better, to understand who is doing what, is very important for them to position themselves. Before we go to my last question, I would like to introduce this question again from Bugra. As a Portuguese, you have many high-level coaches such as Mourinho, Villas-Boas, Paulo Fonseca, Jorge Jesus, Nuno Espírito Santo, many, many others. What makes Portuguese coaches differ and successful? Pedro?
I do believe that at least should be the adaptation we might have and the Portuguese culture. I mean, long time ago, like 500 years ago, we conquered the world. I mean, yeah. We discovered at least one third of the world. So we need to leave our country, which is a very small country, and go to conquer the world. So I think it's in our blood. But nowadays we need to adapt. For you to have an idea, for example, 3 years ago, but it's 3 years ago, we need to make like a sort of the renovation of the UEFA Pro. On the last meeting, one of the contents we received was exactly about that. Mm-hmm. How to adapt to a different cultures, how to understand different cultures, how to understand different cultures behave. When I get to, for example, to Mexico, it was very, very difficult for me to understand different sorts of behaviors that the players were having, which were in shock in the first moment for me. So I need to stop a little bit, try to understand it, try to how to get to them, and the word to apply the word I told you before, how to convince them. Uh-huh. For me to understand in the first place and after to convince them. Let me give you one idea. I do believe that football has a lot of culture. And of course, in different parts of the world, you see the football differently because that is a sort of philosophy within those countries that by history take you to see the game differently. To see the training process differently. So if you have your own process and you go there and try to implement just like that, so it's going to be different. You need to know them. You need to know how to approach them, and you need to know to implement that, interfering as less as possible in that culture. After that, and when they will be convinced that this is the way, so you can try to implement everything, but you need to go step by step because, for example, tactical periodization for us as Portuguese, at least for me, speaking for me, was difficult to understand it in the first place, and you still need to study it a lot. So understand it and implement it is totally different. So imagine what can interfere in a specific football culture that is not used to train like that, is not used to think the game like that, and even less it's used to perform the game like that.
Pedro, my last question. You were saying that when you were 6 or 8 years old, you said that the staffs were only the head coach, and the head coach delivers everything, all the content and the training sessions and everything. You said about also the importance of match analysis for you to get the patterns, for you to set up your team. And my question is, of course, we've noticed that football has changed during all of these years, of course. The job as a coach also changed. But in your opinion, what is your vision about the coach of the future? Will it be someone that only manages a staff? Because the staffs are getting bigger and bigger. Do you believe that should be someone that has to have a lot of competences in what concerns to technology? What do you believe that will be that coach of the future? What skills do you think that coach must have to be successful? And, what do you think that this coach of the future will look like, Pedro?
I do believe that the coach of the future will be the type of a manager that needs to, first of all, manage expectations. And to manage expectations, they need to have, as you told, a lot of people working in different areas, which you need to have also those different knowledges. I mean, technical and tactical will be the first ones. Match analysis is going to be very important, of course. I mean, all the details or the points that you have in your mind and you work on a daily basis to work with a football team nowadays, you are going to keep it. But I do believe that you are going to extend your knowledge in all different areas. So regarding, for example, the creativity, the innovation, the virtual reality, even not yeah. neurosciences, I mean, robotics, I mean, everything is going in that direction. You just yeah. need to follow those steps. So I'm totally against people that says that everything is discovered in football. I don't believe that. I do believe that you need to keep being creative. You need to be trying to innovate all the time. And I need to think, you need to think the things differently. On a critical, to be critical and analyst all the time in order for you to combine all these things. So I believe that the coaching staff will be bigger and bigger and bigger. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you need to interact with all the areas at the same level. It doesn't mean that, for example, which I describe my technical staff now, needs from pass from here to be 20 or 30 people. But the clubs need to have all those offices. The clubs need to have all those departments in order to give you the big data, because we are talking about the future is going to be the big data, yeah. and you are going to be the one that choose. You are going to make the filter in order for you to decide which data do you want to use on a daily basis, which is much more important. Than others or not, and of course each one of us individual is different, so you can imagine that 20 to 25 players are different. And I do believe that even we are not going to be a collective sport, but individually I think we are going to be much more important about the individually, to know the individual much deeper, and of course to work the individually more on an individual basis as well.
Pedro, thank you very much. It was a wonderful conversation. I think you explained everything in detail. I believe that our audience is very glad to have you with us today. I would like to thank you for your time. I would like to thank also our audience that took part of this conversation. Please, if you liked this interview, please click on the like button. Also, please introduce some comments about the next talks that we might have, suggestions maybe. Pedro, once again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good luck. I hope that everything goes well with you in the future after we leave our houses and go to work again. Hopefully everything goes right. Thank you for your time. Thank you for being with us here at Soccer Hub. Thank you very much, Pedro.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. All the best for everyone.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.